So we get more ferocity from the Gospel of Luke, the gentleman's gospel. And it's particularly apposite, I think, in this day when self-fulfillment is the law of the land, where Jesus enjoins us to say, we're worthless slaves. Go figure. A friend of mine several days ago, who goes to Mass regularly, said to me, I'm not even Catholic. I was sort of taken aback, because I know this person's background, Catholic family, whatever that means. And so it started me thinking, and the readings today just urged the topic of faith, which I think is a perennially difficult thing to deal with. Faith for me has always been a struggle, always been a struggle. And the 7 years at the major seminary did not help at all, but only aggravated the problems for me. Because faith, and this is one of the many deficiencies of the seminary training of my day, was described as an assent of reason to truths revealed by God. Well, the argument is circular. If you believe in God, then you're going to assent to whatever God says. We assume. But what about the first step? Okay, I'd like to step back and look at life in a larger context. I think it is true to say that all life, all real human life is based on faith. Everything. Including the empirical sciences to which we hold such high regard. Because if you look at science, the scientist has to believe before he or she does anything that the world is rational, that it's rationally penetrable. And you only know that as a starting point. And then you establish it by proofs. But the basic problem with science, of course, is that it says only that is real, which is measurable. Well, that raises all kinds of problems. How do you measure love? Using a very corny cowboy song called I Love You, a Bushel and a Peck. And it's obviously ridiculous. How do you quantify beauty? There's no chronometer in the world that's going to say, this is beautiful and this is not. So if you look at human life, I think squarely, we are, as somebody has described it, the only insecure animals on the planet. You don't have to tell an elephant how to be an elephant. The elephant knows as soon as he flops out of his mouth. The elephant knows what it is to be an elephant. The elephant knows the meaning of elephant life. We, on the other hand, are born not knowing anything. And the only way we grow up assured that the world is rational and okay is that we have been socialized to believe that. That's why we have parents who have to keep reassuring us, it's safe to be here. This is not a strange land. It's all right to be on this planet. And the proof of that is obvious. All you have to do is look at kids who were raised without parents. They're no place. They're no one. So, we look at the seminary. What was the problem with the seminary stuff? It was totally abstract. The assent of reason to propositions, blah, 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 blah. So you repeat the Apostles' Creed and you sign your name at the bottom. Yeah, I'm here with you. That's rubbish. That's rubbish. That's nonsense. And I think that was probably an ingredient in the fact that faith was always so problematic for me and continues to be to some extent. So we step back and say, why do I believe? What do I believe? And given the fact that we are these insecure animals on this planet, sooner or later it has to dawn on us that the first aspect of faith, it is a choice. Now, we in the Roman church say faith is a grace. Okay, but it's a grace offered. You have to choose to accept it. You choose it. And in choosing it, you shape your life. You become who you are. That's what freedom is all about. In a very real sense, freedom is an act of self-creation. Okay. So why do I believe? I have to. I can't live in a world of total absurdity. It seems to be a necessity in me that I have to find meaning. But that meaning is not lying there under a rock, you know, or behind a bush. It has to emerge from my understanding of the world, I think. And of course, there are multiple understandings of the world. I think I was put on the right track by a book title of a Swiss theologian whom I don't like very much, Hans-Urs von Balthasar, who has a book entitled Nur Liebe ist Glaube, ist glaubhaft. Only love is believable. Only love is believing. And we know that to be true. The most fundamental appetite in our beings is to be loved, to be known, to be accepted, to be cherished by somebody. Because without love, we're less than savages. We're no one. We don't exist, really. We haven't entered the human race. Okay. Does that solve the problem? Oh, by no means. That only opens a great big aperture. What is love? We're all hounded by the primary evil, and everybody, I think, agrees to this. The great atheists agree to this, that the basic love is self-love. You know, we look out for number one. We have to look out for number one. Because if we don't, somebody else is going to get us, get a leg up on us. You know. But you only do that for so long, and you say, there must be something greater than my ego. There must be. Otherwise, the whole operation is nuts. Crazy. Again, an exercise in absurdity. And at this point, it's possible to look at the figure of Jesus, who, according to the Gospel of John, declared that God was love, whose very existence was permeated by his belief that God loved him. So freedom, first of all, from his egoic needs, so that he could be open for everybody and come to love everybody. If you look at the other great religions, the Buddha, for whom I have profound and long-lasting respect, was totally concerned about self-fulfillment. Even if in that process you found out you really didn't have a self, but that's all right. That's the act of self-fulfillment itself. You know? Well, I have problems with that. Islam, as we know, is pretty mixed up on this subject. Obedience. Islam means submission. The very word means submission. Well, that's what we were taught in a seminary, but it was supposed to be a Roman Catholic seminary. You don't submit and obey. You try to love. You try to learn what love is. You try to learn how to love. And if you really come to believe that love is what it's really all about, ultimately, then you run headlong into that great statement of Dostoevsky, which Dorothy Day loved to quote often and again and again and again. Love, and Dostoevsky knew something about love, is a harsh and dreadful thing. Because normally we want to have painless love. And a love that gives us a good time, to give a sense of fulfillment, enrichment, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they're basically projections of our egoic needs. But if there really is something larger than my ego, then the matter becomes much more complex. And somehow out of the mist, the cross appears and takes on deep meaning. Try to love selflessly as Jesus did. Try to love selflessly as Jesus did. If that's truly what life is all about. Opening myself to others, all others, receiving all others, is a path fraught with pain. It's very easy to understand what the pain derives from the breakdown of the ego structure. For the making eccentric of your own life. I am not the center of the universe. That process is lifelong and inordinately painful. And the cross leaps into very sharp focus as the cost of loving. But it's faith, folks. You don't have to believe that. If you look at the world today, where is love? Where does love prevail? Where does love prevail in our world? Look at Aleppo, for God's sake, which is, you know, this slaughterhouse, which has been going on for a long, long time. Is that an anomaly in human history? By no means. That's far more characteristic of our lives on this planet than is Jesus' teaching. Blessed are the poor. Love your enemies. Forgive those who persecute you. There's nothing abstract about that, you see. If it's real, it's written in our guts. You can't, and this recalls another conversation with a King's graduate, who does not believe in God, I don't think. Well, maybe he does, I don't know. But there's no room for real suffering in his life. Real suffering. Suffering in the cause of trying to love other people. He's clueless. And that's understandable. He lived in Western culture where you don't, you know, anything as unfair as a headache, you know, it's going to destroy your life, as the advertisements say over and over again. And they mean it. But you see, that's a counterfaith. That's a faith that obliterates and negates everything I've been trying to say. First of all, to myself. Faith is a struggle. Faith is essentially that wonderful Greek word, agonistic, from which we get the word agony. The agon was a trial. Faith is essentially that. And again, the seminary failed me massively by teaching me, if anything feels bad, it must be good for you. Totally mindless sense of how the world works and how you are to comport yourself in the world. Meanwhile, I don't know, maybe I'll spring this on my friend who no longer sees herself Catholic. I don't see myself as a Catholic under the rubric of Joseph Ratzinger, of John Paul II, for the most part. Both autocrats. both of whom seem never to have read the gospel, says, where Jesus is quoted as saying, I come among you as one who serves. And service is a harsh and difficult thing.